Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. Now, before I went to graduate school and got my master's in public health, I received my BA in anthropology. Now, I love learning about the hunter-gatherer cultures, and I always felt that the foods they ate were pure and simple, unlike the refined foods of today. Is there something in our genes that was passed on by early humans that would make it better for us to eat what is called a paleo diet? Well, today this question and many others about the paleo diet will be answered by Rob Wolf, the author of The Paleo Solution, The Original Human Diet, a research biochemist and one of the world's most sought-after strength and conditioning coaches. The Paleo Solution unearths the story of the original human diet by uniting the anthropological knowledge of our hunter-gatherer past with the latest cutting-edge discoveries from genetics, biochemistry, immunology, and life extension research. Rob will talk about why the government's current grain-recommended diet is literally putting us in an early grave. He will discuss how a few tweaks to your diet and lifestyle can make you look, feel, and perform better than you ever thought possible, and much, much more. Rob, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thanks for having me. That sounds like a lot that we're going to cover. Holy cow.
Sometimes I do half-hour interviews, and I'm about 95% paleo. I really loved your book. I mean, it's funny, it's engaging, it's fascinating. In the prologue, you write about an observation game that you play. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, you know, it was just a little thing that I did, and actually started it up in Seattle when I was in an alternative medical school, which was just kind of sit down and try to figure out in any given situation, you know, how many people would you characterize as looking healthy? And it's not in any type of like odd way, but I think when you get into kind of a health-related field or you're thinking about going into medicine or something like that, it's a nice question to just kind of ask, okay, does this person just visually look healthy? Do they have any type of like orthopedic issues? Do they walk with a limp? You know, different things like that. And as time went on, it just becomes more and more difficult to really grab more than maybe a person or two out of a group of 100 people who I wouldn't say, wow, they look healthy and vibrant and just alive. And so that's kind of the prologue there, and that there's a little bit of an analogy to it, that as we see fewer and fewer people who are healthy, our expectation of health and our expectation of what's normal changes.
Exactly.
And it's almost like a frog boiling in a pot of water that the temperature rises very, very slowly. So that's the intro.
Yeah, and that's the danger, is that people start thinking being sick is the normal way to be. And,
yeah.
You know, you share a story about your parents and how they were smokers and they had a host of health problems. I remember I think it was when you were young, you asked your mother if she wanted to live to be 100, and she said, oh, no, I would be in so much pain. And that's kind of, again, the expectation that you grow old and you're going to be sick. And can you share how your parents' ill health affected you and how you got into this lifestyle?
You know, I think it made me, and probably most folks would throw me in this category, a little bit of a health zealot. I think you could kind of go one of two ways. You know, you could try to out smoke, out drink, out bad eat your family, or you kind of you go the opposite direction and you look for some alternatives to that type of lifestyle. And I think that's the direction that I went. And from a really, really early age, and this is growing up in like rural Northern California, you know, at a young age, I had an interest in acupuncture and anything health medicine related, particularly on the alternative side. I think that I definitely had a very wide kind of counterculture streak in me, which led me into some like vegetarian investigations and all that. And I think everybody in their youth usually plays around with something like that anyway. But I was particularly zealotful in that endeavor. So it really was just a 90-degree angle change of direction from what I saw in my own family.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because I lived in Santa Cruz for years, which is very similar to Chico, where you're from, and this cracked me up. You wrote, creepy girls who tend to be both vegetarian and pretty hot. Well, in a hot and a depressed, misanthropic, high likelihood of hip fracture due to a fall sort of way. What do these hippie girls encourage you to try, and how did that take your health from you?
Well, you know, a great way, and this is horrible to say, it's possibly divulging too many secrets that I should be saving for, like, when I have sons, but if you can learn how to cook very, very well as a modern male, then the likelihood of you scoring a good date is very, very high.
Mm-hmm.
And so I figured out early on that, these girls had no idea how to cook. They were definitely interested in food. And if I could throw something out there like, hey, I'll make you a chana dal curry, and then we'll wrap that thing up with a little bit of baked tofu with some sort of like a rosemary glaze on it, then their eyes lit up and they're like, really, you can do that? And
wow, you got me.
Absolutely.
I love chana dal.
So that was kind of the catalyst for it. Like, I've always enjoyed cooking as well and as the science stuff. And so it was a way of improving the dating life. And, I liked eating. So,
but unfortunately, your body didn't like it too much. But what kind of health issues were you experiencing?
Well, it's interesting. Like, I competed as a powerlifter in high school and was a state champion in powerlifting. I was 185 pounds, I'm only 5'9", but I could stand flat-footed under a basketball hoop and then jump and dunk a tennis ball. And so I was really strong, really, really explosive, very powerful for someone my size. And I was eating kind of a mixed standard American diet and had acne and had, allergies. And at that point, we knew that I had an allergy to oats. But, I was, by all accounts, pretty healthy. And as I started eating this vegetarian way, cut out the meat, cut out the pork and all that sort of stuff, started eating more beans, more rice, all that sort of stuff, I started peeling muscle mass off like crazy. And what I didn't really notice at the time was that the food that I was taking in was coming out essentially the same way. Like, my digestion was not working. Chinese medicine perspective, they would say I had low digestive fire. And it took a number of years for me to kind of get worn down under this. And as I progressed and got more and more sick, I went more and more vegetarian until, the end stage of that is kind of like a vegan approach to things. I never went raw foodist, but that was kind of the progression. But what's funny is that I was so sold on this concept that vegetarianism was healthy that I never just sat and felt my body. I never just spent a few minutes inside my skin, and I was like, okay, why do I have ulcerative colitis? Why do I have high blood pressure? Why do I have depression? And why do I have this weird, like, non-localized pain that's in, like, every tissue of my body? And I just never really stopped and thought about that. So even though I'm very, very sold on this paleo diet concept, and even though I really encourage everybody to give it a shot for at least 30 days and see how they look, feel, and perform, and track biomarkers of health and disease, see if that goes in a favorable direction, I implore people to maintain your rational integrity. Think. Don't just buy into any nutritional approach because it sounds good or because the latest studies are saying it's the way to go. By all means, be open and be, open to change, open to doing something new, but then remain critical. Like, if it doesn't work for you, by God, do something else, because I just about killed myself with a blind faith and a essentially what the government was telling us, which was high carb, low fat, it's healthy, and kind of the end stage of that was a vegetarian diet, which our government has gone even more that direction now, 15 years later, 10 years later.
Yeah, it's true. I am so glad that you brought up the point about you got to listen to your body. Don't just go with what this diet says or that diet. I do better on a paleo diet. When I eat grains, I just don't feel that well. I can eat a little bit here and there. Whereas my husband, he feels better when he eats grains. Now, he eats whole grains, and I know that we're going to talk about that as well. But it's interesting. I really think that people need to listen to what's going on with their body, do what feels right to them, because I think maybe it's not for everybody. But I don't know. I mean, do you think that the paleo diet can work for everybody? Or do you think that some people maybe, even though maybe it's healthier, they still might do better off with some grains in their diet?
Well, the thing is with your husband, I would be willing to argue that he probably just does better with more carbs.
Yes.
And so I would steer him towards like yam and sweet potato and squash and stuff like that.
Oh,
and
okay.
I would bet you the farm. I'll bet you. And so here's where I'm kind of maybe talking out of both sides of my face. I'm saying be rational, experiment, and all that sort of stuff. And then I'm turning right around and saying, no, I think he would be healthier and feel better eating a paleo diet. But in my experience, it is exceptionally rare that people do not notice feeling better when they fully pull grains, legumes, and dairy out of their diet. Mm-hmm. And Now, like you said, like it sounds like you're at probably like an 85, 90%
yes.
compliance, or like occasionally you go out and probably have like some corn tortillas and some beans and rice.
Yes.
I'm kind of a big gluten Nazi. I just beg people to avoid gluten-containing items.
Yes.
But in the case of your husband, I would argue that if he just did a lot of, like pumpkin and squash and yam and sweet potato, and he probably ran more from what I would call paleo carbs, I bet he would look, feel, perform better. We could probably even track some biomarkers of inflammation that would be improved with the removal of grains out of his diet.
Now, you know, it's funny because I read the book and we're having this great conversation, but I just realized that for listeners, they might be saying, well, wait, let's back up. What is involved in the paleo diet? What foods should people be eating?
Well, ideally grass-fed meat, wild-caught fish, local seasonal organic fruits and vegetables, good fat sources, avocados, nuts, seeds, olive oil. I'm really a fan of coconut products, and real minor supplementation. A little bit of fish oil if you need it, some magnesium, but it seems helpful for a lot of people. Many people benefit from some vitamin D supplementation, vitamin D3. But in totality, that's kind of the picture. And like my wife was gone for a day or two doing some business consulting. And so when she was driving home, she texted me and said, man, I'm really, really hungry. And so I made her I took a small sugar pie pumpkin, cut it in half, cooked that in a pressure cooker, which took about 6-7 minutes to do it in a pressure cooker. And then in a skillet, I cooked some grass-fed ground beef. I took about a quarter pound of spinach and cut that up super small, kind of a chiffonade deal, so that it would be really small and easy to chew up. And I threw that in with the beef and put a little bit of organic garlic in there.
Wow.
And then I stuffed the pumpkin with the beef spinach concoction. And she walked in the door, and then I had scooped the seeds out of the pumpkin and cooked those in some coconut oil and put a little bit of garlic and just a dash of sea salt on it, and then let that cool. So she had a little bit of a nice aperitivo right when she started getting going to get the appetite going, and then she had the pumpkin and ground beef concoction.
Okay,
and it
I'm drooling
really
over here, Rob. I'm literally like having to wipe my mouth. I mean, that sounds like heaven. There was a while where I would have a sweet potato for breakfast, and then a couple hours later I'd have an avocado, and I felt really good.
Yeah, if you live in Northern California, like I live in Chico, California, Northern California, it's a Mediterranean climate. I mean, you have to like try not to find good produce around here. So if you live in Michigan and it's the dead of winter, it's kind of a different story. But, you know, most people have better access to good food than what we think. Even some of the big kind of mega food places oftentimes have some very quick turnover on their produce, and although it's not organic, it's at least fresh relative to what you're going to find almost anywhere else. And then you just kind of buy what's in season, and you're off and running. But, you know, that meal, we had pumpkin, we had ground beef, we had spinach, we had garlic, and then, you know, Nikki did dress hers with a little bit of cinnamon, but that's 4 or 5 ingredients. I guess coconut oil, too, which I cooked the pumpkin seeds in. The whole meal took me 20 minutes to cook.
That's I got to get a pressure cooker. That's incredible. Yeah. That you can cook a pumpkin in 6 to 8 minutes. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And so that was 20 minutes of total prep time, but I really was only involved with that meal maybe like 6 or 7 minutes, because I would just set a timer and come back and stir it, and so I was working on my email in between that. So people just get really intimidated. One, they hear this paleo thing, and they're like, oh, I don't know how to eat like that. And it's like, okay, you do. You've eaten scrambled eggs and fruit before for breakfast. You've had grilled chicken and a salad for lunch at some point in your life. And at some point, you had grilled meat and veggies for dinner. Some way, someday, sometime, you had those. Now all that we're talking about is, instead of eating the bread, rice, pasta, potatoes in between or with all that stuff, you kind of peel that out and just stick those paleo meals that you absolutely have eaten at some point in your life, and you just string those together, more meals than not, more days than not.
Yeah,
it's really not a big deal.
No, it really, I mean, there's things like frozen vegetables that can help. I mean, you know, sometimes you can't be perfect, right? And I think, actually, though, I've heard that the way they flash freeze them is that it actually can retain a lot of nutrients. So sometimes it's a good way to go. Now, I want to get back to a question that I introduced in the introduction. Is there something in our genes that was passed on by early humans that would make it better for us to eat the paleo diet. So if you can talk a little bit about the anthropological information and also what you've heard when you talk to the anthropologists at Chico.
You know, it's so funny. We own a gym in Chico, California, NorCal Strength and Conditioning, and a number of our trainers go to the very, very good medical anthropology department and take some classes. And it's funny because our trainers will ask a lot of questions about kind of ancestral eating and paleo diet and whatnot, and the professors in these departments really enjoy the discussion, and they're like, yeah, it's obvious our hunter-gatherer ancestors were far healthier than our agricultural ancestors. Like, the transition from hunting and gathering to agriculture, we saw like a loss of about 6 inches of height. We saw increased infant mortality rates. We saw bone malformations, all kinds of deficiency diseases like Burberry and kwashiorkor and stuff like that that you simply do not see in hunter-gatherer populations. Now, the funny thing with this is that folks who don't have an anthropology background, I don't know if it's just because everybody has watched one episode of Discovery Channel or what, but everybody suddenly becomes an expert on human origins and anthropology. So they start throwing out all these things like, oh, we don't really know that much about our hunter-gatherer ancestors, or, you know, it's hard to catch animals. We ate grains and all this sort of stuff. And it's just hilarious because if we were having a discussion about, like, mid-18th century Russian literature, nobody would chime in on the topic. They're like, I don't know, I'm not really an expert on that. But suddenly when we throw out human origins and diet, because people have, like, watched a Discovery Channel show and because they eat, suddenly they're an expert on this stuff. And so it's funny, but these professors in the anthropology department, they're just fully on board with the paleo diet. They're like, yeah, it's obvious. What people don't understand, and maybe this puts it in a little context because of crime shows like CSI and stuff like that, forensic science is an outgrowth of medical anthropology. Medical anthropologists are really the ones that have figured out a lot of, you know, like the crime scene investigation type things about, like, how long a skeleton has been in the ground and different stuff like that and under what circumstances the individual died. But also they understand very, very clearly what circumstances the individual lived, how they ate, whether or not they exercised, to what degree they exercised, because this is all a story that is told in the way that the bones are put together, the way that they look, how strong they are and stuff like that. And it's very clear that our hunter-gatherer ancestors were at once well-fed, but also very, very active and well-rested. They didn't see much in the way of starvation. Certainly they had episodic periods of lack of food, but it really is nothing as compared to what we see in agriculturalist populations, early agricultured populations. And it's just that 3 million years of human and pre-human development that is what it goes into our genetic makeup. And that is why we do better being outdoors more, exercising more, eating a diet that is more in line with our genetics. And for some people, this totally makes sense. The light bulb goes on. For other people, this is very uncomfortable. They don't like recognizing that we are a part of nature. And then even some people who are maybe kind of into nature, but the direction that they're looking is more of a vegetarian agricultural approach, they really need to take a step back and look another, you know, they need to look before agriculture for the original human diet, for what the diet is that is woven into our very genetics. And this is where we're going to find kind of our optimized health, longevity, and performance.
Yeah, what was really interesting to me is the way the folks in the nutritional sciences department reacted to you.
Oh, they hate me. that is conveyed to us from other clients that we have in the gym who know the folks in the nutritional sciences department, because Chico's just a small town. I mean, they literally hate me. And I tried to get a couple of email exchanges going with the gals over there at the CSU Chico Nutritional Sciences Department. And I made an offer. I told them that if they would put together an undergraduate and a graduate research program that was focused on evolutionary biology, looking at nutrition, I would fund one undergraduate and graduate research student per semester.
Wow.
At $1,000 each, which would have been the largest stipend that they have in their program, and they refused to do it.
Oh, my goodness. Why do you think they're so close-minded? Are they just sort of, you know,
I'll probably get in big trouble. But
well, I don't want you to get in trouble.
It's really weird. Like, and you know, there's a lot of really good registered dietitians out there. There are a lot of good people in food sciences and whatnot. But a lot of people go into those programs, and it's a little bit like therapists. The people who go into therapy, they've got their own like issues they're trying to deal with. Mm-hmm. A lot of people just have food issues who go into this stuff, and I don't think any of them are comfortable with the way that they eat and what they have going on in their own life, and like. It's just this constant, like, roiling battle with food. And the interesting thing for me, like, if you step back and remove all the emotionality of it, that nutritional sciences department theoretically is a subset of biology. If you go into biology, the guiding tenet, the only thing that makes any sense when you view biology is looking at evolution via natural selection. And so medicine, nutrition, exercise physiology should all be oriented towards evolution via natural selection as their guiding light. This is how we formulate our hypotheses to then validate things via mechanistic investigations, but they absolutely have none of that in their programs. And this is part of the reason why nutritional sciences largely are just scratching in the dirt. They compare one grain-based 65% carbohydrate diet with another grain-based 62% carbohydrate diet, and we just keep, it's like a dealer just shuffling cards. Like, we never really get any data out of that. It doesn't tell us anything. We have some people like Professor Lauren Cordain, Stefan Lindberg, and different researchers who have started viewing all of nutritional science and even exercise physiology through the perspective of evolutionary biology, and they're doing some amazing research. We have some mechanisms now describing the underpinnings of potentially all autoimmune diseases, and they're linked back into grain intolerance. And wow. It's just fascinating and very exciting stuff. But we live, you know, if you dig into the history of science and you look at when quantum mechanics first hit the scene, this is like early 1900s, 1920, Albert Einstein, Max Planck, these guys, when a bunch of quantum mechanics, which is now what we understand to be the primary description of our universe from a physics standpoint, when quantum mechanics first hit the scene, there were virtual fistfights over this concept, and people arguing that there was no way that this could be accurate. They ignored the data. And it literally was just a process of waiting for the old guard to die off. And this is what we're waiting for. We're waiting for the old guard to die off and to retire, and for new bright-eyed researchers to come in who are willing to look at new ideas, and not just new ideas, but look at the hard facts that are in front of them and realize that our nutritional policy of the last 30 years has failed miserably.
Yeah, no,
and
it's
it has done nothing to help people, and it's not based on science. It is not based on a coherent theory that ties together not only nutrition, but also all of biology. There should be some continuity to that. We are, you know, a children of nature, and so we should be governed by the same forces that governs all the rest of biology and nature and whatnot.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you brought up inflammation, and something that I've always been taught is that if you have lupus or multiple sclerosis or other autoimmune diseases, is that meat causes inflammation in the body. And you're saying that the grains cause inflammation. If you can shed some light on that, because I always find that really confusing.
Inflammation is a process in the body that usually is associated with the immune system. And we need some of it to live. When we get colds, when we get a flu, we have an immune response. And we need some inflammation to respond to that. It's basically the immune system defending us. When we exercise, and some of the soreness associated with exercise is an outgrowth of inflammation. And all of that stuff is normal and natural. But what happens is certain dietary factors, certain lifestyle factors, lack of sleep being a really big one, these changes in the way that we live now compared to the way that we lived as hunter-gatherers, it increases the inflammation in our body, and it increases it to a degree that we can become autoimmune. And now the part of the problem that we have faced is that everything that it has been alternative with regards to health, alternative with regards to nutrition, has been vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole focus has been, let's try to get people off of meat and seafood and dairy products, which I'm not a fan of dairy products. We can talk about that later if you want to. But that's been the focus. But the thing is that it's been very nebulous as to whether or not the removal of meat has actually improved for anybody the outcome of various autoimmune diseases. Whereas with the adoption of a paleo diet, we are seeing people put autoimmunity in remission, and not just hit and miss, but in a very consistent fashion. University of Lisbon, Portugal, has had two 10-person clinical trials of folks who have severe, very nearly life-ending rheumatoid arthritis, such that they're on methotrexate and different immunosuppressants. These people, we have two 10 out of 10 trials of people putting rheumatoid arthritis completely in remission. Lauren Cordain, my professor, has a spectacular 6-part video series in which he talks about reversing multiple sclerosis. And the thing is that science and alternative medicine has looked at these autoimmune conditions as separate entities, but we now understand that it's actually a damage to the gut lining, which allows intact food particles into the body, and then via a process called molecular mimicry, in which proteins that are in our food and proteins that are associated with bacteria that are in the gut, that some of these proteins look like proteins in our body. And so when these proteins are allowed free access into our body, the immune system attacks them as if they were a bacteria or a virus or a parasite, and then those antibodies can then attack elements of our own body.
Oh, my goodness. And that's going to happen more from a grain-based diet.
Grain, legume, dairy, yes.
Why legumes? That's what breaks my heart. I love lentils and black beans and pinto beans, and that's the one thing that I just, you know, I'm like I said, I'm like 90%, but those beans, I love them.
I love all those foods, too. They're all tasty, and I always joke that hookers and cocaine seem like a really great time, but it doesn't mean that they're healthy for us. You sound really healthy.
Yes.
You don't have any, overt signs of inflammation or autoimmunity, or maybe you do. I don't know. But this is where I just recommend to folks that try for 30 days.
Okay.
Go grain, legume, and dairy free. And then you have a baseline to really compare, am I, in fact, as healthy as I want to be? And so at the end of that time, usually, and say like your husband would be an example of this too. So we run both of y'all on a grain, legume, dairy free protocol. At the end of that, both of you guys would likely say, yeah, I feel better, my digestion is better, I wake up with less stiffness and soreness, and that's a sign of decreased inflammation, that's a sign of decreased rate of aging, and, if folks want to look at a health and longevity standpoint. So that's all very interesting. Then you need to step back and ask an important question. So I feel better, but is the trade-off worth it? Do I love my black beans every day so much that I'm still just going to eat, black beans and chana dollar every day? Or does it become a deal where it's, you decide, well, maybe I'll just have it kind of Friday, Saturdays. Like, it's easy for me to eat paleo Monday through Friday, and then Friday night I go out with friends, and then I can have some Mexican food or maybe some Indian food and kick my heels up. I'm going to pass on the non-bread because I'm staying gluten-free, because Rob, his head will explode if people eat gluten. And so I'll give that a shot. And what people find is that it becomes not a thing of trying to attain perfection on this approach. You find where your best health is, and then we can play with it a little bit and see how much, like, booze we can get away with, and how much, beans or rice or whatever that we can get away with, before we see some kind of downturn in our health. And usually what that involves is you just have a little bit more latitude with your food on the weekends, and then you're back to your usual program Monday through Friday, because people usually eat the same food Monday through Friday anyway.
That's true.
It's just kind of a matter, is it good food or is it bad food? And so Monday through Friday, kind of stick with it, tightly, because it's just easier anyway. We're busy, and you cook your food ahead of time, or, you just make some smart choices. And then you just know in the back of your head, okay, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I'll kick my heels up and I'll maybe have some Mexican food. I might have a little bit of ice cream. I might have a couple of NorCal margaritas, which are tequila, juice of one lime, splash of soda water. That's kind of my preferred booze to go for, maybe a little bit of red wine. But you kick your heels up a little bit on the weekend, and everything's pretty good to go. Now, the caveat there is if you are sick you don't get as much latitude. If you have an autoimmune disease, if you're type 2 diabetic, if you've got some serious systemic inflammation, then we need to get you healthy first before you can go out boozing and kicking your heels up. We want to save your life, then you can live more of a life.
Oh, I think that's great because, again, I mean, I might eat beans a couple times a week or something, but I'm not, you know, going crazy, and then I feel pretty good. Rob, I could talk to you all day, but I just want to thank you so much, and I encourage everyone to check out the Paleo Solution. It's wonderful, and you're going to laugh out loud. You know, my husband and I both, he read it, and trying to get him to try it for 1 month. We'll see what happens. So,
if you get some buy-in. Yeah, well, the potential of a seriously increased health is lurking out there. And then I'll just throw out there also that we did make the New York Times bestseller list.
So hooray!
The book is doing quite well. So,
so
very
glad.
Excited.
That is fantastic.
Yeah,
now, how can people learn more about you and your terrific work, Rob?
RobWolf.com, RobWolf.com. And I have, and if folks don't want to buy the book, if they just want some resources to go and learn more about the paleo diet, then we have a ton of resources there, including a quick start guide, discussions on how to, modify different lifestyle parameters. We also have the Paleo Solution podcast, which we've been bouncing between number one and number four on iTunes for quite some time.
And that's great.
Folks can write in questions, and I do my best to either answer them or help them fall asleep while listening to the podcast. So,
well, we should get this one up there because you and I have a great rapport.
Absolutely. That would be great. That would be fun.
All right. Well, I want to thank you again. And if people want to learn more, they can go to itsyourhealthnetwork.com. You can watch It's Your Health TV. You can listen to audio archives. You can check out what's going on KKZZ, which is in Ventura County, where I co-host a show once a week on the Freeman Michael Show, Wellness Wednesday. Hope everyone has a great day. Check out the Paleo Solution. Take care. Bye-bye.